Coronavirus on campus, trying to restart a school year in the midst of a pandemic, plus providing people with antibodies to fight the virus in the cities. If you thought the class of 2020 had it rough, the class of 2021 faces even more uncertainties. Just getting back into school is proving to be a challenge. And for colleges, plans are already in place for thousands of kids who live on campus to do so safely. How will a college like Augustana in Rock Island actually accomplish this? We talked with Augustana's president, Dr. Stephen Balls, to find out. Is Augustana really going to be ready this fall?
We think we'll be ready this fall. Augustana set as a goal at the outset of the crisis to reopen in the fall if we can do so in accordance with CDC guidelines, State of Illinois guidelines, and American College Medical Association guidelines. So far, so good. We are set for reopening, but Jim, we continue to monitor things from day to day.
Well, you almost have to, because let's be honest, you're going to have to be very fluid, very flexible, really able to turn on a dime in the weeks ahead.
Yes, indeed. And our faculty, and I'm so proud of our faculty, have agreed to teach on what we call the high flex model. That is pivoting back and forth between live classes and online classes. In the event that we reopen and have to close down again, faculty will pivot. In the event reopening is delayed, faculty will pivot. And there will be students with immunocompromised disorders and other disorders that can't return to school or don't want to return to school. So all classes will be offered both in the live format and by distance learning.
Well, and you've already got a little bit of experience because this pandemic struck at the heart of the spring semester into March and April when you really had to change your teaching abilities immediately. What did you learn in the spring that you're going to be able to use this fall?
Well, we learned we can do it. We learned that a traditional liberal arts college like Augustana can pivot quickly to distance learning. And we did that within 2 weeks. We declared a 2-week spring break. We had intensive faculty training within 2 weeks, and we learned that we could offer great online classes. That being said, it was not perfect in the spring. So we beefed up our technological capability. We've engaged in additional training with faculty to convert what typically have been live classes to online classes. We learned we could do it, but we learned that we need to polish it over the summer, which we've done.
Well, professors, of course, have lesson plans just like any other teacher. I mean, the way that they had planned for their semester, just you throw that book out the window last spring. Were you pretty much preparing for something like this for the fall?
We are prepared for this for the fall because we realize that the key to fall is to be flexible and to be adaptable. So faculty are preparing both live classes and online classes. Now, it's difficult, right? An effective live class is different than an effective online class. So our faculty have been polishing those techniques up, and I have a high degree of confidence that they'll be ready to go.
What was the biggest challenge? I mean, you pointed out the technological challenge, just making sure that people were able to communicate from a distance.
Well, the technological challenge is a significant challenge. About 10% of Augustana's student body is international. And we not only need to provide for the technology for our domestic students, but make sure international students have access to the technology necessary to complete online classes. It is a formidable challenge. We've sent out computers to students to borrow. We've worked with students in enhancing their internet connection. You would think it would be easy, but it's not.
No, yeah, I wouldn't think it was easy at all. Let's talk about something that you haven't done ever before during a pandemic, and that is have students move in. Move-in day is still planned, but you're going to make sure that these kids, their parents, and the staff are staying safe. How are you able to do that?
Well, move-in day will be a bit of a challenge under the laws of the state of Illinois. So instead of having mom, dad, brother and sisters, cousins help with the move-in, the student and one other person will be able to move in. They'll have to register for times in advance so we maintain low density in those buildings, because move-in time is a time of sweating, bumping into each other. So move in at Augustana College will be progressive and low density move in.
And then once they're in the dormitories, very restricted visitation if anybody's allowed in.
Yes, so there will not be the visitation rules that we typically have. As a baseline to visit the residence halls, you need to be a student. You can't have parties in your room. Students in a room can have one other person visiting. We really want to keep this 6-foot space. We want to make sure that masks are on. Jim, it's easy to reopen. I can reopen with a declaration. It'll be tough to stay open. And that is, we need to ensure that there's not community spread at Augustana through masks, social distancing, testing, contact tracing, education, and if necessary, quarantining.
Having a case on campus, a COVID-19 case on campus, do you think that is inevitable this fall? Because I know that you have plans for whether or not a student is suspected, or even a staff member, but usually a student who's living on campus, is suspected to have the coronavirus.
I think it's reasonable to expect that on every campus there will be COVID cases. It is important to catch those cases early through testing, to quarantine, and contact trace. We've actually had some experience already with this. We've had, since we have closed down in the spring, between 75 and 150 students living on campus. These are international students that have a difficult time getting home or have visa concerns about getting back in. Several of those students have had suspected cases, so we practiced quarantining them and keeping them separate, so we feel ready to go. Now, it happened that none of those suspected cases were actual cases.
I want to get back to the calendar, of course, but first I wanted to talk about those international students because, as you well know, there was that dictate from ICE that perhaps some of these students might have to leave the country if they were actually getting remote learning, and that was it, the administration backtracking on that. That really seemed to be almost an unnecessary burden that you guys had to face over the last 2 weeks at least.
Well, I felt badly for the international students because it created substantial uncertainty. Fortunately, our system of democracy has worked, and that dictate by ICE and Department of Homeland Security was reversed within a week. There was litigation on that filed by Harvard and MIT. Augustana was one of 180 colleges that filed an amicus brief in support of Harvard. And as that case was going through pretrial negotiations, it became clear to the government that this regulation would be stricken down. So to the Trump administration's credit, it was voluntarily withdrawn. It probably would not have had a big effect on our students since we're going to live classes. But still, it created a lot of certainty among the students here. And international students are asking, are we welcome in the United States?
And that's what I was going to ask, as a matter of fact, because let's be honest, international students, if I could be crass about it, is a moneymaker for colleges and institutions. But more importantly, it gives you a better world view. These are students that are contributing to the world that are experiencing America. Are you really having some fear that the way that they are being treated now could have a bit of an effect on whether or not foreign students will be interested in coming to American institutions like Augustana in the future?
Jim, we are concerned about that, and we think that we will see a decline in the number of international students studying in the United States because of uncertainty abroad about whether they are welcome. But I assure them that they are welcome at Augustana, they are welcome in the Quad Cities, and they're welcome throughout the United States. The fact that we've had policy glitches does not mean that they're not welcome, and that virtually all Americans welcome international students because most of us were from immigrant families ourselves.
Well, and let's be honest, Augustana is very prideful for good reason of making sure that its students are learning internationally, that they have foreign programs, as well as welcoming people from other lands here. I mean, what does that add to the fabric of Augustana?
Oh, it adds tremendously to the fabric of Augustana. We have international festivals from around the world. But imagine being in a class on world politics and having students from Vietnam, from Ethiopia, from Germany there. It just enhances what happens at Augustana College. But Jim, the real value is that it creates international understanding, and we recognize that that which unites us is much greater than that which divides us. When I was a college student, we were concerned about the Vietnam War. I will tell you, we will never go to war with Vietnam again. And examples of why are like Augustana College, with 50 Vietnamese students each year, learning and living with domestic students. We will build international friendships and international understandings, which will lead, in my opinion, to greater levels of world peace in the coming years.
Dr. Balls, you talk about that, about American students perhaps getting better acquainted with foreign students. You think of your college experience where even you had study groups, you had everything in groups, you had extracurriculars and the like. The fact that it's going to be social distancing, the fact that there aren't going to be large gatherings, that really is part of the college experience that we'll be missing this coming school year.
It is, and I would be not honest, Jim, if I would say to you that the college experience next year is going to be identical to the college experience that it normally is. It will be a different experience, but we're working very hard to make sure that it is a good experience. Take choirs, for example. We will no longer have large choir concerts next fall with large audiences, but we may have concerts of 10. The very small, socially distanced audience. We may have a large concert over the internet available to Quad Cityans and the community. So it won't be the same, but it's going to be pretty good at Augustana College.
And I was going to ask you, because I want to talk about athletics, but I did want to talk about extracurriculars, because we sometimes forget about the music program or the arts or the drama, that these students are also affected by the coronavirus as much as an athlete is.
Indeed they are. So with respect to theater, for example, we're likely to have socially distanced productions with very limited audience houses in the state of Illinois. Perhaps many of them will be in our outdoor theater. So we held yesterday an outdoor religious service in that theater to try to get ready where we're all socially distanced. It worked pretty well. It will be different, but the nub of the experience, the opportunity to prepare for a concert, for a theatrical exhibition, will still be there. You prepare again, you refine, you achieve excellence, and then you display what you've done. It'll be different though, Jim, you're right.
And let's talk about athletics. The Vikings program is you're so proud of that at Augustana. What do we expect coming this fall?
We don't know where we're going to be with respect to athletics in the fall. It is my hope that we can comply with NCAA guidelines and safely have a limited athletic program. It will be limited with respect to no spectators or very few spectators, fewer games, and certainly protective measures within the games. The college presidents of the CCIW conference are meeting on a weekly basis. We have not yet made a final decision as to whether we will have high contact sports such as football, soccer, and volleyball. I would expect that decision to be made soon. The NCAA just released its guidelines yesterday with respect to safe competitions. We're pouring through that. These are rigorous guidelines that require COVID testing of students in many cases twice a week, right before the competition, 72 hours before the competition, and afterwards. So it's impossible, Jim, to say at this point what competitions are going to look like at Augustana. It's my hope, because I believe that athletics helps students grow in mind, body, and spirit, that we can have those competitions. Probably fewer games, no conference games, no spectators, and even the possibility of moving virtually everything to the spring. So more to come on that.
Let's talk about the calendar for 1 second, because some unique things are happening at Augustana. One is you are going to be holding classes on Labor Day, not the most significant change, and you hope that all of classes, at least as far as in on-campus classes, would be completed by the day before Thanksgiving.
Yes, and our hope there is that we are very conservative in thinking about where the disease may be after Thanksgiving. If disease levels are at the level that they're at now, or still even if they're less but still high, we may determine that it is imprudent to bring our students back from Thanksgiving and risk community spread at Augustana. So it is likely that we will finish live classes before Thanksgiving, take finals online. If the disease is tamped down, we might come back and take finals in live classes. But I'm proud of the faculty. We've revised the calendar to take into account this contingency that it may not be smart to bring them back for 2 or 3 weeks simply to take finals.
It was a true shame of what happened in high schools and in colleges to the class of 2020 that they couldn't celebrate the end of such an achievement. What do you say to the class of 2021 that is starting with this pandemic and still an uncertain spring as well?
Well, I've heard some of our high school seniors coming to Augustana joke that they are going to be the COVID class at Augustana College. I said, don't think of it that way. Think of yourself as a very special, resilient, determined class that is learning how to overcome diversity. The COVID disease will not define you. Rather, it is your resilience that will. Jim, we're going to pull out of this at some point. As we pull out of this, we will do regular football in a grander fashion than ever, choirs, theatrical performances. We will, although the activities next fall and perhaps next spring will be different, we will come back the following year with a bang.
Our thanks to Augustana President Stephen Balls. Starting next month, the U.S. Census Bureau will start sending workers door to door to count all those people who did not fill out a census form. It'll take time, and it's starting once again in the middle of August in the Quad Cities. It's an effort to make sure that you are counted.
Why should I care about the 2020 census?
Every 10 years, the census counts everyone living in the U.S.
Count everyone living with you.
Even kids!
Our numbers help shape funding and services.
For all these things.
That's a lot of stuff.
Your responses are safe and secure,
no matter who you are or where you're from.
We have reasons to care.
Shape your future. Start here at 2020census.gov.
At a time of COVID-19 and so many uncertainties, we all could use a few little victories, right? Well, that's the title of a song done by Quad City musician Murray Lee Rice. He's actually part of a four-man group called Rude Punch, but he joined us to perform some of his solo music at Moline's Black Box Theater. Here's Murray Lee Rice with Little Victories.
Didn't get the joy, nor have I won the lottery, but I just made a perfect cup of coffee. Sometimes it's all about those little victories, oh yeah. Bills are overdue. My bank account is overdrawn. But I think that I just met someone. Sometimes it's all about little battles that are won. Yeah, winning big sure would be nice, but worrying about it will put your heart on thin ice. At least I'm not 6 feet underground. Sometimes it's all about not beating yourself down. Pays like a low budget lottery, but I still crave that perfect cup of coffee. Yeah, it's still all about those little victories. Oh, it's still all about those little victories.
Murray Lee Rice with Little Victories, recorded at the Downtown Moline Black Box Theater. Back in March, we knew very little about COVID-19. In fact, if you got sick, you probably didn't know about it. Instead, they did tests for other illnesses like the flu or strep. If you tested negative for those, it was assumed you had COVID-19. That was the case for WQAD News 8 reporter Marissa Sulik. We talked to her back in March when she thought she had COVID-19. She has since found out that she in fact did. And what she did afterwards is very interesting. So we talked with Marissa Sulik. So Marissa, the first question would have to be, how are you feeling today?
I feel 100%. Ever since those past few weeks back in March, I have been continuously feeling better. But today, I mean, I feel 100% even after my plasma donation.
Go back to the beginning, because a lot of people may have forgotten that in early March, in mid-March, when you contracted what you thought was COVID-19, you weren't sure. They gave you tests, but not a COVID-19 test. So you never really knew.
Yeah, exactly. I got it when this all started, and everyone was very unsure what COVID-19 even was. There weren't enough tests in our area, so the only thing I was able to get was a flu or strep test, and those both came back negative. So I was told to assume I have COVID, and during that time, I'm not gonna lie, that was pretty scary to say the least.
Well, and why don't you go back to what it was like, because I mean, you got hit pretty big, and something happened to you that you didn't expect, and that was the loss of some of your senses.
Correct, yeah. I woke up one day and I knew I immediately felt off. I called into work and I felt chills. I felt a fever that would just kind of spike randomly on and off. But that fever only lasted for a day, which is actually pretty common with some COVID patients. But it wasn't until that 1 week after that I lost my sense of taste, my sense of smell. And whenever I have a cold or a flu, that is one symptom that happens to me once in a while. But this is one that lasted for weeks when I lost both those senses.
Now, you're a young person. You are a healthy person. So, I mean, you probably were able to get through some of these symptoms pretty well compared to some people who might have weakened immune systems.
Right, correct. It still was a long time for me. Like, usually when I have a cold or a flu, I could usually sleep through it one night and wake up and feel immediately better. But even for this one, I kept trying to, you know, just sleep it off. And every single day I'd wake up just feeling the same. And that same was pretty down. I was probably at my lowest at that point.
So then recently you decided to do what? I mean, how did you confirm that you did definitely have COVID-19?
So back in the beginning of June, I heard about through a friend that I could just get a simple antibody test through LabCorp in Davenport. All you had to do was just get a quick reservation online, and I went one day before work, took 5 minutes at the most, my entire blood test, and the results came back just a couple days after, and it verified that I had the antibody. I tested positive for the antibody that showed I had COVID-19 at some point. I'm assuming it was that March point, but that was the validation I needed to know that I did have COVID-19.
And then at that point, you decided what? I mean, that you could give your plasma, or you wanted to give your plasma?
Yeah, at that point, I mean, it was always a question if I wanted to donate. I'm not going to lie. I'm not the best when it comes to I've never donated blood. I'm not the best when it comes to needles. But I knew with this new test and with so many patients still needing plasma, that was one thing I should do. So I looked into trying to donate. And not only did I want to just donate, I wanted to show viewers how the donation process works, how other people can donate, how it's not that intimidating at all. So over the course of a month it took to get to go through the whole process just to get it verified to actually donate on camera. So that was the whole process, but I eventually came to the point that I wanted to donate and show viewers.
Well, I know you're not like a medical expert in this area, but you're sure more educated than I am. My understanding is two things when it comes to the antibodies. One is that they can wear down over time. The other is if you're an asymptomatic COVID-19 person, in other words, you're not showing any of the symptoms that you did, that your antibodies may not be as strong. What did you learn about antibodies after you got the diagnosis of having COVID-19?
Actually, it was while I was donating, I learned all about the antibodies. I was talking with some of the professionals here, and they told me that your antibodies really only last so long. How long? They don't really know. It all depends on the person. They say average, they've seen around 3 months to 6 months. So, but again, those could last for a year. It doesn't, it all depends on that person. But I needed to donate while my antibodies were still in me at the time.
Absolutely. And what the antibodies do, and there's not an absolute certainty that this works, but in past medical cases, you use the antibodies to help mitigate, to lessen the severity for other people who might get the same flu, the same disease, or in this case, the same COVID-19.
Correct, yeah. I hope with these with this plasma, I mean, I was told by the people at CSL behind me that I could help one to possibly 10 COVID patients who are currently battling the virus, maybe even worse than I was. So just knowing that I'm helping, whether it is one or 10 people, it's helping someone in the end. And that's really what it came down to. And I still have to go back one more time just to verify that my first sample is my sample. So you need to donate one more time, which I plan on doing this week.
Well, you said that the process was relatively simple. I don't know if it was very time consuming, but it's obviously something that you feel strongly that you're happy you did. And you would hope that perhaps more COVID-19 patients, people who have recovered, might do as well.
Absolutely. I had a couple of friends who did have COVID and they reached out to me saying, wow, that's such a great thing you did. How was the process? I mean, it is kind of questionable. No one has really had a donate. It's plasma donations aren't always so common, but especially now it's needed more than ever. When it came to donating my plasma for COVID, the hardest part was really the paperwork at the beginning. That took over an hour, hour and a half maybe, and I had to go through a physical. The donation itself took 40, 45 minutes, so it went by pretty fast.
And so what do you say to other people who might be thinking about this?
I say go for it. Again, it's all a personal decision, but again, your antibodies, they only last for so long, so you might as well donate them while you have them, while you can, and feel like you did a good deed.
Well, and as you said, a good deed, but that could help upwards to 10 people.
Mm-hmm. Just one bottle of plasma. If I go back in and donate another bottle, I can help another 1 to 10 people, so you just keep adding it up.
That's Marissa Sulik, a reporter from WQAD News 8, regarding her bout with COVID-19 and her effort to help others by donating her plasma. On the air, on the radio, on the web, and on your mobile device, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.